Okay, so now we get to go into one of those controversial teachings. But if I'm known for anything, it should be for that, right? Giving controversial teachings. Well, maybe in behaving poorly. But one of those two. But seriously, this is controversial because I'm not giving this Dharma talk in any political light. I want to make that very clear. I'm not trying to create an argument or anything like that. I'm just giving it as it's presented. So, those that follow the Vajrayana, and specifically the Tibetan version of Vajrayana, were instructed that the Dzogchen and the Mahamudra is the highest of all the meditations, and that the Chan is considered just the Mahayana and not as high of a meditation practice. I just want to make very clear what they're discussing. It is not the meditation technique that they are actually discussing there. Because the Chan meditation technique is the highest meditation technique. It's the same technique used in Dzogchen. But the approach is what's different. So, for all of you that are hanging out with us today, I don't know if you're lucky or unlucky, but you're going to get the highest meditation technique right now. And that is, if we look in the second portion of this, under the way is perfect light vast space, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 lines. And the fourth line down from there says, when you try to stop activity to achieve passivity, your very effort fills you with activity. It continues, as long as you remain in one extreme or the other, you will not know oneness. And for the rest of this, it's going to actually be discussing this meditation approach. So, here it is. And I hope... for whatever reason, apparently you have the merit or the conditions to hear it, but here it goes, and hopefully it doesn't ruin your practice. When you're meditating, of course, you should always start out, I'm going to put in the disclaimer, start out with proper posture, the four-part breathing, if you know that, the four-stage breathing meditations, any other techniques that you may have, in order to get yourself to a very good, stable meditation state, right? Get into the samadhis. You gotta go work through those jhanas and get yourself into a samadhi state. Once you get into the samadhi state, the idea is to just stop. And what we mean by this stop is we literally stop everything. You stop trying to create a meditative state. You stop trying to hold the meditative state. You stop trying to pacify or calm the mind. You stop trying to suppress thoughts. You stop trying to support thoughts. In other words, you stop everything and you just let the mind be completely at ease. It may or may not do something. If it does something, you do nothing. This is really tough because all of a sudden you're just sitting there. Right? So you've been following the breath, you've been doing this practice, that, front of the light going this way, that, all these things, seed syllable, blah, 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 whatever your practice is. And then you're sitting there and you have this great meditative state going, nice, peaceful, serene. And then you let go, which we actually call it collapsing or dissolving into the samadhi state. So you You fall back, you collapse into the samadhi state, and then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, bang! Excellent horses and generals. What do I mean by that? Your mind goes, what do we mean by that? Out of nowhere. You wouldn't, I mean, there's no context. You're just sitting there and all of a sudden, bang! What's an excellent horse? Does that have like that big feather on its head? Or should it be like painted? Or what does that even mean? And who's the general? How many have had that happen in meditation? Just the most random thing like pops in. Okay. This practice is you do nothing. You do not bring your mind back to following the breath. You don't try to pacify the thoughts. You do nothing, not even watch the thought. All you do is just notice that there is activity going on. And you don't shut it down. In fact, you just sit there and you observe how fast it went from the excellent horse to this general. And then from the general, it goes to a bowl of water and food. Is that soup? Do they eat turkey? And then jumps off to, speaking of turkey, I got to go to Trader Joe's. Right? And the mind just automatically just goes everywhere. And what we do is we perceive the mind and all of that activity as being just part of nature or natural phenomena. And you literally do nothing. If it wants to go completely wild, you let it go completely wild. And generally doing that, if you're doing absolutely nothing, see, you're still passive. That's the line. If you try to stop activity, you see it? It's telling you right there. That is the whole big secret. So, and not to slight them in any way, but if you hang out with the Hindus, they're always like, oh yeah, you got to suppress a sneeze. You can't even cough. You can't have a thought in your head. That's ridiculous when it comes to highest form of meditation. You can't do that. To do that fills you with the very activity of trying to chase something down. And that's not observation. That is not the highest form of just being. See, if we want to engage in a just mind, that means we're dealing with this astral realm place. So it's like being a star in the sky. The star is not going to somehow put on the brakes because I don't want to get close to that moon or curve around that part of the sun. They don't do that. They don't dodge and duck and hide from a meteor or an asteroid or a comet flying by. They just sit. But I mean, some of these planets just get hit all the time. They just constantly pound it. And the planet doesn't do anything. So should be the mind. To really get into the deepest states of meditation is just to purely sit unmoved, no matter what activity may be happening. And in fact, that's how you can actually perceive the impermanence of all things. For example, see, I have a friend who's really into Hinduism, and so his meditations are filled with wrestling all the time. I mean, he's just constantly battling nature. So if he gets a little tickle in his throat, and he, because he won't let himself cough. And it's like, all you're doing, man, is prolonging this thing out as super, super long. And in fact, from this text, If we notice the tickle, oh, there's tickle. We just recognize that there's some activity. And then the body goes, and then it's gone. So where's the tickle now? Oh, what an example of how things just come in and vanish. Arise and dissolve. But instead, he sees an arisal, and then he like drags the whole thing out into this gigantic play, and now the whole thing is all distorted. Because he's caught up in the dream. He's caught up in the play of it. He brought himself back down into this mundane, oh, I can't, that I mean, now it has dualistic view right there. Can and can't. So when it's this line in here that trying to stop activity, it is even the most subtle thing is the mind wandering around. Let it wander around. If it is quiet, let it be quiet. Now, obviously, the more that you train in the meditation, the quieter the mind becomes naturally. So don't think that you're going to just sit down and try this out as a new practitioner. You know, maybe you've only been meditating a couple of years. You're not going to be able to just sit down and do this. It would mean that your meditation periods turn into just sitting around dreaming and thinking and daydreaming and fantasizing and your mind's just all over the place. That's not how to do this. All the other preliminary meditations should be mastered. So that when you do this form of a meditation, you sit, and because the mind or the thoughts are not entertained, they will not stay long. They pass just like the tickle and a cough or a sneeze or the sound of a bell. It dings and then the sound is gone. Just a few minutes ago, we were making all kinds of noise. Where is that noise now? Nothing. Silence. And so the mind, you will see that it comes in these waves. But when the wave comes, you don't do anything. Now, for those of you studying the Vajrayana, if you've gotten as far as your teachers explain to you what's really happening at that time when there are some waves, great. That's that real high thing. But if you don't have that teaching, I'm not giving it to you now because that's really high-level stuff. But the idea is the technique is very much the same. Don't try to suppress anything. Just let it be free. And just watch. Don't get involved in the story. If the idea Trader Joe's comes up, don't make your list. Just keep observing, like it's like going to a movie and you sit down and there's nothing going on. They're just playing music, right? People are coming in, sitting down, the screen's blank, the room's dark, nothing's happening. Then all of a sudden they have these previews. Stuff you generally don't care about, right? Or the slideshow. You know, they show those slides.
Ads.
Yeah, the ads. They pop in, you know, everybody's like looking at their watch, playing with their phone. You know, nobody cares about that stuff. It's the same thing. You're just sitting there. A slide comes up. You go, oh yeah, it's a new slide. There's a new slide. Who cares what the content is? It's an ad. You're not interested. Maybe you were interested early on. So you're looking at them going, oh yeah, yeah, I could get my car washed there for $1.50 on Thursday. That's great. Big deal, right? But then, after a while, they show you the same slide, and then you completely ignore them. It's like, oh, well, I've been here long enough to see all the whole thing, so, you know, I don't have to pay any attention anymore. The same thing happens in the mind. Oh, it's just another thought. I've seen those before. Who cares? And you just sit. And then he says, if you remain in the one extreme or the other... This extreme is everything has got to be completely quiet. Or the other extreme is having the misinformation about this meditation and just letting the mind be completely wild without having done the preliminary trainings that trains the mind to be able to meditate. He says you're never going to want to know oneness, because you'll either be suppressing so to try to get the flat surface of the water, or it'll be so turbulent that you won't ever see the actual nature of waves. One way or the other, you're not going to see the naturalness of it, the oneness of it. And he says, if you don't live in this single way, you fail in both. Your activity is incorrect because it's not skillful, and your passivity is incorrect because it doesn't exist. Or it also is incorrect, fake, false passivity because it's suppressed. The assertion and denial is the same thing as the another way to say the two extremes, which is the eternalist view or the
nihilistic
view. Denying the reality of things or asserting the reality of things. And we're talking about the mind because we're very, very deep in this meditation. Are my thoughts and feelings real or are they not real? Both of those are an extreme, because they're not being perceived through a non-biased filter. There's something else going on. That's why we have to have that clear mind, is to be able to sit, do nothing, just watch the nature of things. When we can perceive the nature of something, then there's nothing else to say about it. Does that make any sense? It's like if you take a glass of water and you play with the water long enough. You can pour it out, you can fill the glass till it, you know, it's higher than the glass. You can freeze it, watch it expand, you can shrink it, you can boil it, watch it turn into vapor. You can play with water for weeks. And at some point in playing with the water, you'll kind of know how water works. You'll recognize that it's almost like a magnet. You get two drops close enough to each other and they'll jump together. And they'll remain as a bubble. Like they're raised, and they will never actually go flat. So you'll have all of these things about it, and then there's not a whole lot to speculate. It's the same thing in the watching nature of mind. You want to get to the point where you can perceive directly without all of the propaganda. So he says, if you deny the reality of things, you'll miss their actual reality. You'll miss their true nature. If you assert the emptiness of things, you'll also miss their relative reality. So what we're talking about is the ultimate and relative. Those of you that have been through the Bodhisattva class, the Lojong mind training, you know exactly what we mean here. And here's the problem. If you talk and think about actual truth, you'll never get to it. It can only be observed. The minute you try to put it into language, you've lost it. It's because truth cannot be put into a conceptual box. What is the proof of that? Let's pick planet Earth. It's infinitely tiny, and it's infinitely large. If we wanted to get scientific, that cannot be a real statement. That's how language works. Language has a problem with something being both things. If we talk about it being infinitely large, we're always talking about it from the perspective of an atom. If an atom or an ant was looking at Earth, it is infinitely gigantic as we keep getting smaller. But if we go out the other way and look at it from the sun's perspective, or even from the center of Milky Way, it's super tiny. And keeps getting smaller the further we go. So there's no truth in the Earth being infinitely large or infinitely small. That kind of discrimination makes it to where we cannot see the actual truth of the Earth, which is, in fact, the Earth is just and when we say nothing, we have the reality. We have the truth. It is thus. So the mind is the same way. Is it quiet? Is it not quiet? That's dualistic. So he says, if you stop talking and think about these things, and you just observe, then everything will become very, very plain to you. It'll be very, very clear. The nature of mind will be absolutely clear, which is neither it being like a monkey, and it's neither being just like a serene lake. It's neither one of those things. In fact, the nature of the mind is and that's it. And no amount of academics will bring you to that conclusion. And won't even explain it, because academics requires words. And it requires tons of mental masturbation, which is a complete waste of time when you're trying to perceive the reality of something. You need direct, immediate experience. I use this all the time. You can talk about putting your hand in a fire all you want. Until you actually do it, it's all just worthless chatter. You do it, and then there's nothing anyone will ever tell you that will change your experience of putting your hand in that fire. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, go home and try it. But don't sue me for doing it or telling you to do it. That's on you. Maybe hold an ice cube, I don't know. But go have a direct, immediate experience of something on your own. Without thinking about it. Just do it and just pay attention to the actual experience. And then don't say or think anything about it. And you'll be engaged in, momentarily, one of the highest forms of meditation. So, if we understand this practice and we start to use it, then the rest of this sutra will start to come to light for us. But this is as much as we'll talk about today. Every time I keep coming down here now without a clock. We need a little clock.
Yeah.
Let's remember to get one of these. Do one.